Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hello, I'm Susan Bulant. I'm your host for today. I'm really excited to be speaking on the phone with Kayleen McFerrin, author of the New Threads series, the most recent one being Buried Threads. Buried Threads presents readers few unknown aspects of Japanese culture as they learn about the Yakuza and the geishas through this thriller romance. But before we start, let's learn a little bit more about Kayleen. Kayleen McFerrin is a California native who has enjoyed traveling around the world. She previously worked as director for a fine art gallery where she helped foster the careers of various artists before feeling the urge to satisfy her own creative impulses. Since launching her writing career, McFerrin has earned more than a dozen literary awards in addition to a finalist spot in the 2008 RWA Golden Heart Contest. A member of RWA, which is Rose City Romance Writers, and Willamette Writers, she also lends her participation and support to various charitable organizations, as well as her own foundation benefiting cancer research in the Pacific Northwest. For more information on Kayleen and her books, visit her website at www.kayleenmcferrin.com, and that is KayleenMcFerrin.com. Hi, Kayleen. How are you today?
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being with us. I'm a big fan of your books, actually. Been working with you for a while now and have the opportunity to read one of the beginners. I think it was, what was that name of it? Crossing.
Oh, Flaherty's Crossing.
Yeah, Flaherty Crossing, and I loved it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I was beginning to read Buried Threads, and I didn't get to finish the manuscript because we had that emergency with our website and had to reassign another reviewer, but I'm definitely finishing it as soon as my schedule allows me to go back to reading.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's a hard one to put down.
It is. Actually, you know what? It's not my style of book, and I loved it from the beginning. It was just like... It hooked me right up, and I think I'm going to be a fan of this type of book for now.
Oh, why, thank you. I know it's a very different genre for me because I don't typically write, you know, a lot of, like, thrillers. But I love writing complicated characters, and I think that's kind of what pulls people into the books, you know. So.
Yeah, and I think that, you know what, I'm going to start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself because I find your cultural mix so interesting. So I'm going to let you get personal with our listeners and just why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I have been writing for, since I was in college. I used to write for the newspaper and did a lot of short stories and such, but I never went into writing novels until about 8 years ago. And I was pulled into doing that when my dad was passing away, and I wanted to write a book to dedicate to his memory. And that's why I kind of wrote Flaherty's Crossing. But as far as myself, my background, I'm 100% Irish. Both of my parents are Irish. And my husband happens to be Japanese. And so it was very interesting raising kids with two different cultures to, you know, bring into their lives. And as a result, and they're beautiful young ladies. I have three girls. And as a result, they're very dedicated into both sides of our cultures. And they love going out and having sushi and having a good time singing karaoke. But they also have the conservative side of mom. And so it's just kind of a fun way to grow up in this household. It's very loud and noisy, and they're always talking over each other. And so I love the energy when everybody's together. So that's kind of what my family's about.
And, you know, I think it's such an interesting mix because they're totally different cultures. And usually, you know, you kind of tend to go towards something that is similar. At least in my case, I remember I told my dad I'm Italian. I told him I will never marry an Italian. A month later, I met my Italian husband. So...
That just happened. Yeah,
so you're my hero because you did what I wanted to do.
Yay. But it's funny because my girls, you know, they look Hawaiian. You can see the ethnicity in them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they have the cute, you know, they just smile. When they smile like sunshine. They're just so much fun. But I was always interested what they would be attracted to, you know. Would they go, you know, with Japanese gentlemen, or would they be more interested in going, you know, for Caucasians? And it was very interesting. All of them went to Irish gentlemen, which I love. So Irish rules in this household.
So I imagine that this, you know, you've also a well-traveled person. So I imagine that the traveling and this cultural mix that you have in your household mm-hmm. affected your writing. So how did it affect it? How did it help develop your creativity and your writing?
Well, it's so funny. I think because my mind's very open to different cultures, because, you know, my own household, when I travel, I'm always looking for something unique, a unique character that I can incorporate into a story. And so we travel extensively every year through my husband's business, and we're on the road all the time. And every time we go to a new place, I love taking a little journal with me and making notes about the, you know, people, unique people that I meet. And I love interacting with people. I love the opportunity to learn from other cultures. And so it's, you know, it's been nothing but an eye-opening experience for me my whole life, is, you know, to take my children around and experience different ways of life. And so we've been doing this since they were very young, is once a year we save up enough money that we can take them on an international trip. And they've been all over the world, but I love taking them to third world countries and having them experience other ways of life so they appreciate what they have. You know, I think so much our children forget, you know, and take a lot for granted. And so I think it's, you know, wonderful to show them other ways, you know,
yeah,
of how people live. So
I agree. But I think that also with your background in interior design
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the art galleries and your passion for wine tasting, it gives them you're giving them a very global vision of the cultural mm-hmm. of the world, not just, you know, showing them the countries and the language and what it's about, but you're also giving them the fun part of culture.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
I can't go to a country that I don't walk into an art gallery. It's so funny. I'm so drawn to art. And so every time we take a trip, I mean, that's the first thing I want to do is let's go see the art galleries, you know. And I think it just says so much about the people in that country. You know, it shows their passion and what's around them. But I had an art gallery myself for about 8 years, and I loved the experience of just working with talented people. And, you know, I had 200 artists, and it was an interesting challenge, you know,
mm-hmm.
trying to keep everybody happy and smooth egos. but I loved having the art shows and just showing people's talents off. It was just so much fun for me. So it's, yeah, definitely something I'm delighted to share with my children.
Do you think that just being surrounded by so much creativity is what induced you to finally publish?
I think it is, you know. It's my husband, his creativity comes from all of his business interests, and he's always coming up with new ideas to open a new type of company and business. And my children, you know, have evolved growing up in that household, so each one of them have their own creative genius that they directed in different avenues. You know, one's a CG graphic designer, and one's an artist, you know, writer in her own right, and another one opened up her own business and does brokerage and commercial real estate. And I think each one of them have blossomed as a result of growing up in a culture in our household where, you know, open minds, you know, is like go for any challenge, you know, go out there and try to find out what inspires you and follow that dream. You know, and so it's, I think that made me more dedicated to kind of doing my own thing and showing my own abilities in writing.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned that Buried Threads is a total different type of book that from your other one. So how is it different so our
mm-hmm.
listeners understand how you've evolved as a writer?
Well, the fun thing about writing Buried Threads was I knew I was going to write this book about 5 years ago. It took a while for me to cultivate the characters that I needed to be in it. And the reason is because I traveled to Japan extensively, And when I've gone over there over the last 40 years, I've met the most fascinating people. I've had an opportunity to actually go into the geisha quarters, which very few Americans get an opportunity to do that. And I became very good friends with a mama-san who runs, it's like a tea house is what they call it, but she has a group of family members that are all maikos and geishas that she sends out to different events and parties and such. And I became very good friends with her, and I met a number of other people, and I knew that there was a story to write there.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, my husband's uncle was a member of Yakuza, which is a kind of a gangster organization. And I never knew that much about him, but I just found him fascinating, the one opportunity I had to actually sit and speak with him. And so when I decided to go into this genre and write this story, I just knew I had a great group of characters that could explore and educate people at the same time as telling a great thriller. And so this was a different, you know, way for me to go about writing a story that I never thought I would write. But I just knew that I had to. I wanted to educate people about this culture and way of life and have, and at the same time give them a great experience, like a roller coaster ride, you know?
Yeah. and that you did, actually. But you also did something that is very refreshing to find in kind of a, you know, erotic romance that has also thrilling components. You did write very tasteful, sexy singing.
Oh, thank you.
So I was very impressed. Yeah. And so I wonder whether, you know, for all of us frustrated romance writers, because I have never been able to write a sexy scene or a romantic scene in my life.
Yeah.
How do you go about doing that? How do you know what it's enough to show and what not?
Okay. It was a challenge, especially because, you know, when I wrote the first version of Severed Threads, which is the first book in the series, I kind of felt like, okay, I'm introducing myself slowly into this genre and doing, you know, like a bedroom scene, basically, and trying to keep it subtle but not too much over the top. And when you write a book about Japan, it's very different because it's very exotic. And the fact that I'm introducing characters, one that had never had a sexual experience before, so it had to be something that... You know, it had to be something where the gentleman was introducing this new world to the geisha.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to take it very slow. It had to be a very slow, progressive thing. And I had to be careful about language because some people become very offended if you talk too much body, you know, parts and such.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had to be an emotional connection. And I think that's where you start, is when a writer starts writing about a romantic situation, it's got to be an emotional connection. And so it has to be something internal that they're feeling. And then everything else kind of falls into place when you're writing it. But if you just write it for pure, you know, excitement or pure drama, it's not going to captivate an audience. It's going to be a little shocking. And so it has to be that emotional connection. I think that's where people fall short.
That's a very great, a great point, because I think that's what draws me sometimes to books that are about romance, but I'm always afraid about going to a little bit more detail and further, because I think that I would be, you know, I'm a different generation. I was born and raised like with the mindset of the Italians from the 1950s. So it gets to a point where, you know, I don't want to know all that information. I don't want to visualize it, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like somebody's watching and say, oh, look, she's reading that. So I didn't feel that way at all. I was having the liberty to imagine, and I felt connected to the geisha, you know, and it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think because, you know, when you write this kind of story, it's like, I don't want to get into the point where people are like, oh, you're writing porn or something. And it's very different because it's an important element of the story. You know, if you're writing strictly to write, you know, a thriller, it's fine. But when you've got characters and there's emotional connection, it's important to show that relationship and why there's a bond. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I didn't write it for a shock factor, you know. But it's funny because when I told my children that I was writing this type of story, they are scared to read. They're scared to read because Mom wrote this, you know.
I know. Can you imagine? We don't want to know when Mom, you know, bringing up on her head.
And my husband claims, oh, chapter 23, that's me, you know. And so we have a funny thing going on there. But it's but I think it's important to people to understand that it's actually an important element, because I think that by the end of the story you understand that that character, that Geisha, is so entwined and tangled up with the character she's been with, mm-hmm. in her relationship, that you understand the mindset. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, people wouldn't understand why she feels the way she does by the end of the book.
Yeah,
yeah, so.
And I also love the theme of the book in one sense, because there's so much mystery behind geishas.
Yes.
You know, there's just, we don't know anything really, mm-mm. about their lives, and you know, the fact that you share so much about culture in Japan, and I thought it was wonderful. I can't
you.
Wait till I get back to it, and so, because I'm dying to know how it ends.
Well, it was fun because, you know, I think, you know, I use so much of my personal experience, and it's, a lot of people think, well, I can just go do research on it, you know, and there's very little written when you go to do research about geishas. It's, you know, it's just basically, it's written about their lifestyle. There's very few people have an opportunity to know what goes on in their heads.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact, in Yakuza, oh my gosh, I spent 3 months doing research on Yakuza to write this book. And it's very difficult to write about because, you know, it's a mafia. And little is known about the characters within the organization. They don't share their personal lives, you know. It's very secretive. And so that was the biggest challenge for me, was revealing that aspect of the book.
Was there any fear when you were doing that research at all? Or,
you know, it's because you have to be very careful, because there are, like I did mention one family, you know, name, that is mentioned in the book, that is an existing Yakuza family. But I was very respectful in how I used it. And so, you know, during the tsunami in Japan, which was incredibly destructive, mm-hmm. there surprisingly were members of these families that stepped up and actually delivered food and diapers and all kinds of things to try to help people, which was kind of surprising to me. So there's two sides, you know, that there's definitely a negative side to these families,
mm-hmm.
but there's two sides to it, and I was really careful to be respective of, you know, that they do try to help their culture and their country as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was careful about, you know, using fake names and such, but there are real aspects about what I wrote that there are, you know, these are real people that have real relationships with a little army of family members, very much like the mafia, so...
Mm-hmm. You know, there's always that human factor that makes us be contradicting within ourselves in many
mm-hmm.
cases. And I guess, you know, with, you know, being in Italy, I know exactly what you mean with the humanity
mm-hmm.
of some of the families. So
mm-hmm.
even though there's such a negative aspect about them, they're still humans and they still should have some positives in them.
Oh, yeah. There's still some compassion,
mm-hmm.
you know, but... They're, you know, they're in it to make money. They're businessmen, you know, and they just happen to be on, you know, kind of the wrong side of the fence, you know. And so it's very interesting to me, though, because there's this respect in Japan when I went there that literally the police know every member of this organization. They know them by name. They are very out there. They walk around where you see them. And it's not really hidden so much as it has been in the past. And so, and in the past, they used to depend on them to maintain control of, you know, all the crime in the country. They actually, the police depended on them. And so it's very interesting. They are like samurai. And so it's, you know, I was fascinated about that aspect.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Kayleen McFerrin, author of Book 2 of the Thread series, Buried Threads, along with the rest of the series. Stay tuned because we're going to continue this fun conversation with Kayleen about buried threads, writing tasteful erotic scenes, geisha culture, and Kayleen's Soulful Giving Foundation. But in the meantime, you can check out her books by visiting her website at www.kayleenmcferrin.com. What is that one thing that that you remember when while doing the research in your time in Japan that you can basically say you have adopted in your life? Because there's always something that when we travel or, you know, we're learning a new culture that we kind of adopt or just stays in our mind for a long time and it kind of affects our way of thinking. So what is that thing about Japan, Japan's culture that the research of your book left within you?
Wow. I think it's just, you know, respecting other people's way of life. It's very interesting because a lot of people who, especially young women that are trying to be independent and strong, you know, when they hear about geishas and their lifestyle, they have a feeling like they're kind of underdogs and catering to, you know, taking care of the needs of others, and they don't really look after themselves. And, you know, the more I researched and the more time I spent with them, I learned to have a tremendous appreciation and respect for them because their whole purpose is to maintain their culture and to, you know, be entertainers and to showcase their abilities. And that is kind of a dying art in Japan right now. There used to be hundreds of thousands of geishas, and now there are, you know, maybe 20,000 total in the whole country. And so it is a dying art because the young generation of women are trying to become doctors and lawyers and expand their, you know, their horizons, and they're getting away from the old ways. And so I think I just learned a tremendous respect from people for their culture and to, you know, appreciate that no matter what you do for a living, you just have to respect that everybody brings something to the table.
Mm-hmm. How are other women in Japan viewing geishas nowadays? I mean, do they feel disrespect or do they feel that it's something, you know, from the past? And do they give importance to that profession at all, or did you get any feedback?
It's very interesting because I have talked to different women, you know, and they still respect. That's a huge part of their history. But they feel like they've kind of outgrown it and that they've moved on in their lives. But if you see them on the streets and so forth, everybody has a tremendous appreciation, you know, admiration that they maintain this, you know, this chosen lifestyle. It used to be a forced lifestyle. And now it's totally chosen that women choose to go into this. And it was fascinating to me because I actually had opportunity to speak to businessmen who sponsor geishas, who like Donnas. And they, you know, are married. And they still have this woman who's a geisha who takes care of their needs. And so it's like having a mistress. And talking to the women in the household that are their wives, they respect that. It's a very different way of thinking, where in the Western world we would be, you know, appalled in thinking that there's this other woman taking care of my husband. But over there, it's still somewhat respected that they are both attending to the needs of their husband, you know?
Wow.
Very interesting. Very old.
This is what I love about learning other cultures, you know, that, you know, if you're able to kind of enjoy the learning process and not be judgmental of the differences, it's fascinating.
It is fascinating, you know? And so I think we can't always impose, you know, our Western way of thinking on other cultures. We have to kind of step back and, you know, understand that this is the way they've lived their lives for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just need to step back and appreciate that, you know.
I agree. I went to your website and, you know, I realized also that you have,
your little projects that give mm-hmm. back to your community. And for our listeners, I really suggest that you check out Kaylin's website, and it is www.kaylinmcfarren.com, and that is KaylinMcFarren. Again, KaylinMcFarren.com, and you can check out all her books, but also you should check out her project here, her charity, which is Soulful Giving Foundation, that you actually started. So what inspired you to start, and what is it about?
Okay, what originally got me going was when my father passed away from cancer and I wrote Flaherty's Crossing, I wanted to do something to give back to people who were going through a similar situation. So what I started out doing was, with Flaherty's Crossing, all my proceeds from the sale of the book, 100%, went to Cancer Research at Providence Hospital, which is in Portland, Oregon. And so they do research projects, you know, trying to find a cure for cancer. And that kind of got me connected with a lot of people, doctors and the hospital staff. And I learned about the needs. And Randall Children's Hospital is another wonderful hospital that helps children with mm-hmm. cancer. And I felt like I needed to do something grander. So I got together with a group of 8 ladies who are good friends of mine, and they all come from different walks of life. And we put together a foundation called the Soulful Giving Foundation. And every year, every summer, we do a huge event that brings in about 2,500 people come to my home. And I live on 15 acres in Oregon, and we put on this outdoor concert that brings in 16 of the best restaurants and chefs and about 8 bands and arts and art galleries, and they all participate. And we raise money for cancer research and for Children's Cancer Hospital. And so it's a huge passion of mine, and I'm very excited to do that every year. So people can visit the website. It's soulfulgiving.com, and it's and a wonderful organization. And so I'm very passionate about that.
And that's awesome that you took on, you know, your passion and made it real for the community, because, you know, sometimes we authors need to realize just the power of what just selling one book can do for others at the same time, you know?
Exactly.
And I've been so blessed to meet people like you in what I do that do give that back to their, you know, whatever it is that is your passion, you know, you're still giving back. You're helping your passion. You're doing something for something that affected your life, you know, and you're making a positive of it, a sad situation. It's just it's a win-win situation when you give back, and I commend you for that.
Oh, I thank you so much.
But that's not the only thing you do. You also have mm-hmm. What I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah.
This little thing for sports. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, my husband and I have been doing an event every year, and it's called Sand in the City, and it's very fun. It's downtown Portland. There's a big square called Pioneer Square, and it's all bricks that are inlaid in the ground that people have donated money to put these bricks with their names on them. And we thought it would be really fun to create this event that can get the whole community involved. And what they do is they bring truckloads and truckloads of sand, and they pour it into Pioneer Square, and they have sandcastle building contests that goes on where they bring in major corporations to sponsor a sandcastle structure, and each corporation has a artist that is assigned to them, and they compete. And as a result of it, people come and they see these things, and they're amazing sculptures. And they compete, and whoever, you know, they get prizes for the winning team. But in the meantime, it raises money that goes to sports, for after-school sports and kids that are not privileged, mm-hmm. that, you know, would like to participate and can't afford the uniforms or the, you know, fees to participate in sports, which is so important to keep kids off the streets and out of gangs, to keep their minds occupied and, you know, keep them going so that they can even look for scholarships out of this. So
I think that's wonderful, because people don't realize just how important it is to keep your kids busy so that they don't get in trouble. That's something I learned firsthand with my mom keeping me always busy, because I was very energetic, and she said, you know, if I didn't keep you busy, who knows what were you be occupying your mind into.
Exactly. You know, and we do shape our children, you know.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's kind of sad because a lot of people put that on, you know, the school systems and on teachers, and we are so important to our children's lives and by example, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm very excited, because my husband and I try to do as much as we can to give back, and now my children have all, you know, they're opening their own foundations. They're doing, you know, what they can, and it's so cool to watch them go by example, and I think that's important in any household, you know. You want to encourage your children to fulfill, you know, positive aspects in their lives.
Yeah, I remember that my daughters keep bringing up, and my daughters are grown already. My youngest one is 19, and they still remember when they were, like, in second, I think the oldest one was in second grade or third grade. It was the first year that I was in this very busy job and didn't get to do much for anybody in the holiday season. So what I did is I took my bonus and I went and I bought a bunch of teddy bears and stuff, and I put hats, Christmas hats on their heads, and then we went to the hospital with no appointment, no nothing.
I love it.
And then we went, and that's the Christmas that they remember. That's the Christmas day.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know, because I always try to give back. My mom was very active.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up in South America, we've seen so much poverty. And she was very active, with I grew up in a missionary school, so she was very active there doing stuff for the community. And so it is so true that, that you know, it's by example that we become concerned with what other people are, you know, well-being. I don't know how to put it, but it's just something that is stronger and addictive to a certain point. Yeah.
You know, and it's rewarding to feel like you're doing something positive for somebody else, you know. And it's every year, you know, since my kids were very little, we always make cookies, Christmas cookies. And when we were all done, I had them all go around and we gave them to the fire department, the police department, you know. And so now my grandchildren are doing this every year, which I love.
That's awesome.
And at Christmas time, rather than exchanging a lot of gifts, you know, because we all have so much, and we've been blessed in our lives, is they've all chosen different, you know, organizations and charities, and they all, you know, donate something to that cause. And I love it. That makes me feel so happy that we're doing something to give back every year.
And if you think about, you know, all the different organizations that they're helping, just one family.
Mm-hmm.
That came out one just family, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You know, I will just keep talking about this because giving is one of my biggest passions. But we're running out of time. And before, you know, we go, I'd like to mention again, listeners, check out Buried Threat. It's a great thriller if you enjoy a suspenseful romance type of, and a little bit of, you know, nice erotic scenes that are very tasteful. This is the book for you, and if not, it's also for you because of the cultural implications in it. I mean, there's just so much stuff I didn't know about the Japanese culture and geishas, and it's just an awesome book, way rounded. But also check out, you know, Kaylin's charities in her website. They're awesome, and hopefully we can, some of us, mirror some of the things that she's doing. Again, it's www.kaylinemcfarren.com. I really encourage you to check it out. Before we go, I would love to find out, and this is a question I do everybody, you know, before you started writing, and you were a different person, I'm sure, as a writer, as who you are now after publishing all the books that you have published, what would you tell that person that was thinking, well, should I publish anything ever? Because I know you've been writing since college.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell yourself when you were in college and you were just starting to write?
What would I tell myself?
Yes, knowing what you know now with publishing about writing. I'm sorry.
I think it's, you know, for myself, it's, I love being able to take people on a journey to be able to give them an opportunity to experience the way I visualize and see things. But looking back, when I was in college and I was writing, I was writing purely for my own enjoyment. And now when I write, I try to write for the enjoyment of readers. So there's a little different mindset there. But, I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly, but for anybody who wants to be a writer, I think what it is that makes you want to publish a book is because you want to leave a legacy. You want to leave something behind that you can be proud of, an accomplishment. And I think it's the idea at the same time that you're leaving a message. When I write books, they're all linked. Every book has a message in it, a hidden message that I'm trying to share with the readers. And for me, it's about allowing the people that read it to know that they can push themselves to accomplish things even when it's the worst time in their lives. There's always something that's out there that they can reach to, that they can accomplish if they just push themselves to have drive, you know, and motivation. And so I think it's just knowing that you can make a difference in someone's life by writing a book, by writing a story, whether you publish it or not. Let people know your thoughts and, you know, your compassion, and just let it out, you know, and you'll be so glad you did and that you share a piece of yourself. I think that's what writing is.
Yeah, well said. I love to make these questions to people because every single author will say something different, and they are all so inspiring. You know, it's a way to people that are thinking about writing to really connect to that thing that you have in common, comparing yourself to who you were when first you published and, you know, who you are now. And very well said. I'm glad that, you know, we are very similar in that sense of sending out messages and leaving something as a legacy. Because that's also my biggest quirk when I write, whether I publish what I'm writing or not. So,
right.
Yeah, so I feel I know you so much better now, and this is why I asked that question. I really, really, really am grateful that you were here today, and unfortunately we're running out of time, and we need to say goodbye. But, your website, KayleenMcFerrin.com. Check it out. Check out also SoulfulGivenFoundation.com and learn a little bit more about it because cancer does affect everybody.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you. And listeners, thank you for joining us today. And until next time.